jammed phone lines, websites overloaded. For thousands of Texans seeking unemployment help and hitting walls, what's next? We'll look for some answers today on the Texas Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. With support from Rand Group, software delivered as promised. No surprises.
I'm David Brown. Coming up, our conversation with the Texas Workforce Commission about efforts to get relief out to Texas's newly unemployed. Also, legal pushback on paid sick leave ordinances. Just where do we stand? When does lots of space mean you're really cooped up? Survival tips from someone who's been there. Plus, the week in Texas politics with the Texas Tribune and a whole lot more when the Texas Standard gets started, right after this. No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard time on this Friday, the third day of April. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. Let's get up to speed on what's happening in the Lone Star State, still under governor's orders to stay at home, of course, though Governor Abbott is avoiding using the language of shelter in place. He says that effectively what he's ordered is what other governors have ordered across the country. Some health care groups are urging more forceful language from the governor. While Texas has so far at least not been overwhelmed on the health care front, there are reports of mask shortages and warnings that there will be hospital bed shortages in places like Dallas in weeks to come. Emergency officials are trying to locate facilities for makeshift hospitals. Today, new numbers from the Labor Department brought more sobering news on the economic front. The first monthly job loss nationwide in almost a decade. The number of losses, 701,000 in March, shows just how abruptly a previously soaring economy came to a stop. Just yesterday, you see, we reported that nearly 10 million Americans have filed for unemployment over the last 2 weeks. The reason that today's numbers are more modest is that the new ones cover the whole month of March. So how are we doing in Texas? Fact is, numbers are a little more hazy, but the picture is nonetheless grim. Officially, some 275,000 people applied for unemployment in Texas last week, but that doesn't count many of the folks who were hitting a dead end trying to be counted and get some help. During one 24-hour period, some 1.5 million phone calls were made to the state's unemployment agency, the Texas Workforce Commission. And reaching a real person was, for many, almost impossible. Ditto going online, there were reports of crashes and pages that wouldn't load. Even Governor Abbott conceded at a news conference this week things aren't going smoothly, promising that the state's working on a series of levels to help get relief for newly unemployed Texans. Here to talk about what the state is doing, Cisco Gomez. He is spokesman for the Texas Workforce Commission. Cisco, welcome back to the Texas Standard.
Hey, thanks, David.
What is the state doing right now? We're hearing, of course, and I'm sure you are too, from some very angry and frustrated people who've been trying at all hours to get through and get their claim filed, but the online system times them out or tells them they need to place a phone call in which they try to call. They're getting a busy signal or staying on hold. What's happening?
So first and foremost, we want to help every Texan in need. And if they qualify for unemployment insurance, they will receive benefits. In the last 19 days, we have helped over 500,000 Texans receive unemployment insurance. So to put that in perspective, in all of 2019, we helped over 700,000 people file claims. And right. If we keep up at this pace, we're likely to hit that number in just over a month.
How exactly, what's actually happening on the back end here? Is it that there aren't enough operators or that the systems aren't robust enough to handle the number of calls or the internet traffic, or what's happening?
So it's just, there's a large number of calls coming through. Prior to COVID-19, the most calls we would receive in a single day was 60,000. That was the most. So to put that in perspective, last week we were receiving on more than 1.5 million calls in a single day. And that was multiple days like that. So We are working into the weekend. We are moving people from other departments to unemployment insurance services. And we are hiring more people to work the call centers. In the last 2 weeks, we hired over 100 people into that department for the call center. We've moved 200 from other departments to handle that secure information and help people with claims. And then this week we're moving another 250 over from other departments to manage that. So we have over 1,000 people in unemployment insurance services working. It's all hands on deck. We are going to help everyone in need.
I noticed that you said that, and Governor Abbott underscored that at a press conference on Tuesday, that you're not going to be denied a claim just because you're having a hard time getting through. But I'm thinking about some of the practical implications here, because this week, you know, rent and utilities were due for a lot of Texans, and many of those who have lost their jobs are now weeks behind in getting unemployment checks. As a practical matter, what do you tell people who have not been able to actually get through so that they can secure a flow of money to make those payments?
So if they qualify for unemployment insurance, they will receive benefits. And to help put them at ease, so prior to COVID-19, your eligibility for benefits, the time that your benefits started, in general, was when you filed that claim. With the disaster declaration, we are backdating those claims to the date of their job separation back until about March 8th. So they will receive those funds. They will receive them, you know, hang in there and help us, you know, let us help them. It's just taking time with the number of people applying.
Cisco, once an applicant gets a confirmation that the claim has been filed, how long between that point and when they actually get a check?
So from the time that they file and become qualified, on average, it takes about 21 days to receive benefits. That's either direct deposit or by a debit card in the mail. For some people, it's going to be a little bit faster. For other people, it might take a little bit longer. It just varies on a case-by-case basis.
Cisco Gomez is spokesman for the Texas Workforce Commission. We'll have a link to the website and to more detailed information about how you can reach out and contact the TWC at texasstandard.org. Cisco, thanks for keeping us updated. We certainly do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Some sideline construction workers are back on the job in Austin and elsewhere after the governor issued an executive order giving the green light for commercial and residential construction to continue. In what used to be often called Military City, the pandemic has brought changes to one of the oldest institutions in the service branches, basic training. The need for new recruits and their training continues, but despite efforts at enforcing social distancing during boot camp, infections are on the rise. Now the military is under pressure to do more, perhaps even suspend basic training altogether. For the American Homefront Project, Texas Public Radio's Carson Frame reports from San Antonio.
Let's go! Get out of this field!
This is a typical morning for recruits in basic military training at Lackland Air Force Base. In this audio from 2018, they wake up at the crack of dawn, pile one after another down a tight stairwell, and hold each other's ankles while they do sit-ups. It's all part of a time-honored system the Air Force uses to produce new troops. But since the coronavirus outbreak, the environment and tempo of basic training has changed. Gary Moore of the Air Force's 737th Training Group explained it at a virtual town hall.
What we were doing is making sure we could maximize social distance and keep trainees separate from other trainees and other military training instructors, as well as our civilian populace, to make sure that we could monitor them for the initial 14 days.
Now the Air Force screens new recruits for the virus as soon as they arrive at Lackland, which means asking questions about their travel history and whether they're experiencing symptoms. Then they spend the first couple weeks doing administrative work in relative isolation. Living quarters have been spaced out. Dining halls, too. But still, several trainees have tested positive. Joint Base San Antonio Commander Laura Lenderman.
This is a threat. It's a threat inside the fence line and outside the fence line. And again, we're trying to preserve the mission essential functions here so that we can maintain our national defense. And one of our main jobs here is the training mission.
Lackland is the only place where the Air Force holds basic training, but officials now have announced plans to send 60 new recruits to Mississippi's Keesler Air Force Base. The idea is to test how workable it is for the service to use several training locations in an emergency.
What the Air Force proposes to do, I think, is very sensible, since one of the problems with boot camp is that people are packed very tightly, and it is a classic incubator of disease, even in good times. So spreading them out would be a part of any solution.
Mark Kansian is a retired Marine Corps colonel and advisor at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He says all of the military services are facing the same problem.
They're trying to keep boot camp open, basic training open. Not clear how long they're going to be able to do that. There's a strong pushback in some segments arguing that the military should apply the same standards and precautions that you're seeing in the civilian sector, and that if they don't, they're going to have more sickness, and then they'll have perhaps some deaths.
Still, the service chiefs argue they have an ongoing requirement to provide forces to defend the country. The military's turnover rate is about 25% each year. As people with four-year contracts leave the service, new ones must be brought in to keep the numbers up.
What the military leadership worries about is that if you shut down basic training, it may be hard to reopen it. And if you interrupt that flow, then your end strength is going to start to go down unless you take the option of forcing people to stay in the service.
So for young airmen, training continues. Lackland is spacing out the arrivals of new trainees to allow more time to clean the dorms, mess halls, and other facilities. And 2nd Air Force Commander Andrea Tullis says she's confident in Lackland's ability to keep new trainees separate.
We're very comfortable with the fact that that population has been, if you want to call it sanitized, to some degree it is, but we have eyes on them constantly.
The experience of one of the other service branches proves how difficult that may be. The Marine Corps has stopped shipping new recruits to its training center at Parris Island, South Carolina, after dozens of recruits and instructors became infected. I'm Carson Frame in San Antonio.
That story was produced by the American Homefront Project, a public media collaboration reporting on American military life and veterans, with funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Social media editor Wells Dunbar is monitoring what Texans are talking about on this Friday. Hello there, Wells.
Hi, David. Well, following from your talk about issues with filing for unemployment in Texas, we're hearing from our friends and listeners on Facebook, hearing lots of frustration and anxiety, but also some stories of success. On our Facebook page, Jessica says she made her account weeks ago and had been having trouble logging back in to request a payment. She writes that she hit a sweet spot in the mid-afternoon and was able to log in an update, but she adds it seemed like the site was crashing the whole time. However, she still got through. Nova Fritz has a suggestion. She writes, this work can be done from home. Hire more coordinators and simplify the process too. Forget repetitive requests. Verify it later. Now is no time for blame. And Laura Hill Young notes that call center jobs are hard on a good day. This call center job was likely rough before the COVID-19 outbreak happened. I feel sorry for the operators.
Yeah, it is hard on everyone involved. We need to hear from you, Texas. Let us know what you're up against at texasstandard.org. Wells back in 35.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas ABLE program, a tax advantage savings program helping eligible Texans with disabilities save for the future. Learn more, including how the program works with certain public benefits, at texasable.org.
This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. For what are likely obvious reasons, calls for paid sick leave have become a rallying cry for workers nationwide. Advocates argue that essential employees now on the front lines and at risk shouldn't lose income if they become ill. In Dallas, protections like those were set to begin this week. But just days before the city's paid sick leave ordinance went into effect, a federal judge pulled the plug, issuing a preliminary injunction. This is just the latest of several such paid sick leave ordinances in Texas cities to hit a legal roadblock. Here to talk about the state of sick leave is Brianna Brown. She is the deputy director for the Texas Organizing Project, which is a progressive workers' rights group pushing efforts for sick leave ordinances in Texas. Brianna, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you for having me, David.
Several cities in Texas took up these ordinances in what seemed like a burst long before there was any talk of coronavirus. I mean, I'm thinking maybe last year, maybe a little earlier. What was the starting point for all this, and what set this in motion?
Yeah, well, the starting point actually is this larger progressive flank. Organizations like ours that are community-based, labor, have came together on a platform around what does expanded healthcare access look like. So, you know, organizations like DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, part of their platform is around Medicare for All. And labor and organizations like Workers Defense Project work on workers' rights issues all the time.
Forgive me for interrupting you because we have a limited amount of time. I want to get precise about when this ball started rolling here in a big way, because we had an ordinance that was passed in Austin, right? Was that last year?
In Austin, it was passed in 2018, actually.
2018. And then you started to see ripple effects, right? You had San Antonio passing one. What was the timeline there, and what do they require, essentially?
Right. Well, it's interesting. A critical part of the story is that how do we get on the offensive, right? We thought it was important to have a strategy that delivered for working families all across the state, starting in the cities with the biggest populations and people who could most immediately be impacted by being able to not make a choice between going to work, being able to provide for their families, and keeping their jobs. So it was really part of a larger strategy to put eventually what became a fight at the state around preemption on our own terms, right? And around an issue that people would be inspired to fight about when we had to fight about it at the state level.
So just to be clear, you had certain allies in city councils and that sort of thing pushing forward with this. In some jurisdictions, there was an effort to try to get this placed on the ballot, for example, that some were successful, some were not. But as I understand it, just to be clear, what exactly does the Dallas ordinance require?
Under the ordinance, employees must earn at least 1 hour of paid sick time for every 30 hours worked. Employees of small businesses with employees of 15 or less must earn at least 6 paid sick days in a year.
And if you're an employer, this is why some employers push back. They said, look, we can't afford to pay this sick leave. And then you had some conservative groups get in on the action by filing lawsuits against these municipal ordinances, right?
That is true. That's part of the sequence. You said earlier, so in the city of Austin, it was passed by... Paid sick leave was passed by the city council in San Antonio and Dallas. We did it through a ballot referendum, essentially collecting hundreds of thousands of signatures of people who would be immediately affected by the ability to not make a decision again between going to work and if they're sick and keeping their job. In all instances, at the core of them is making sure that voices that are typically left out of the process when it comes to legislation that affects our daily lives are front and center.
Getting to this new ruling from U.S. District Court Judge Sean D. Johnson, he said that such sick leave requirements as what's happening in Dallas here should be decided by the state legislature. And in fact, the Attorney General has argued that there's state preemption in place here. So what are the next steps for your organization?
We're going to continue to organize, and organizing is fundamentally about bringing the most voices of people directly impacted to the table. What they've done in San Antonio and Austin is call on businesses and Paxson to drop the lawsuit. We're going to do the same thing in the face of a pandemic where you have factions from all stripes of the political spectrum calling for paid sick leave as an immediate remedy, an immediate form of relief. I can't imagine how a judge would make such a decision in the face of this kind of pandemic that is unprecedented that we're facing.
Breonna Brown is deputy director for the Texas Organizing Project. She's been speaking with us from Dallas. Breonna, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out to talk with us.
Thank you.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a health and safety-focused workers' compensation provider, reminding Texans that the best way to stick together right now is to stay apart. More at texasmutual.com/coronavirus.
And you're listening to the Texas Standard. Imagine this: every day when you go to sleep, you're at work. When you awake, you're still at work. You're surrounded by the same walls around the clock for days, then weeks on end. Wait. Any of this sound familiar? Actually, when it comes to being cooped up, those who work in one prominent Texas industry may have a lesson or two for the rest of us. The Standard's Joy Diaz reports.
Last year, NASA astronaut Anne McLean spent more than 6 months on the International Space Station, and she has a few tips for the rest of us as we cope with COVID-19.
The big thing that I realized was that it's a big mental adjustment that is critical in our success. And that's pretty simply how well we can get along with others. If you have a crew that goes to space and a month into it are not speaking to each other, that's just not going to be an effective team.
And that's precisely the key. We need to consider those around us as part of a team. So, how do we get along? Well, McLean says we need to learn 5 skills.
And those 5 skills are communication, leadership and followership, self-care, team care, and group living.
We've heard that before, right? That active listening and asking clarifying questions are tools that really help people communicate with each other. But what about leadership and followership? What does that mean?
That's basically how the team hierarchy adapts to a changing situation.
Meaning, today you can lead a certain task because you're the best equipped for it, and the rest will follow. But tomorrow, or later in the day, I lead.
Because really, everybody is a leader, no matter what level that you're at. You know, even your kids can be leaders.
After that, do something nice for yourself. And then, be your best self to others. And that is hard, because we're all under a lot of stress.
Try to be calm in the face of stress. Recognize that stress is when expectations don't meet reality. And we can't change the current reality. And so it's probably a good idea that we try to manage some of our expectations.
This may sound old-fashioned, but just be nice. We are a team, so relieve someone from their task if you see them struggling, or volunteer for unpleasant tasks so others can rest.
I think more than any time right now on Earth, and what we definitely saw from space, is that we're all in this together. We need to be intentional. Stay ahead of the mental game, set your goals, and we can do practical things to help our teams. Good luck.
Thank you, NASA astronaut Anne McLean. This too shall pass. I'm Joy Diaz for the Texas Standard.
We're fast coming up on 29 minutes past the hour at Texas Standard Time. We got the Texas Roundup just around the corner. Stick around.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. Texas Democrats in Congress are asking state leaders to allow all voters to have the option of casting their ballots by mail in elections through the end of the year. The 13 lawmakers on Thursday sent the request to Governor Greg Abbott and Secretary of State Ruth Hughes in response to social distancing requirements. Robert Julian is press secretary for Houston Congresswoman Sylvia Garcia, who's leading the call.
Congresswoman Sylvia Garcia and the entire Texas delegation is committed to making sure that folks are not only staying safe, but being able to exercise the most fundamental right they have, which is the right to vote, and making it easy and safe for them to be able to do so.
Voting by mail in Texas is currently limited to certain groups, such as people who are 65 and older. A new effort is connecting nursing home residents with the outside world during the coronavirus pandemic. As Houston Public Media's Sasha Cordner reports, the Adopt a Nursing Home initiative also allows Texans to send supportive letters and messages to staff.
Texas Healthcare Association President Kevin Warren says the initiative will help people like Tina Cook, the director of nursing at a Houston facility who works long hours every day. At the same time, he says Cook also had to move her husband to a safe location since he's a liver transplant patient.
And he is at high risk for COVID, you know, and she hasn't seen her grandchildren in a month. And it's all because there's such this focus and this commitment on preventing the disease from spreading and at the same time ensuring we're doing everything possible for the residents that are in our skilled nursing and assisted living facilities. And so that's why letters of encouragement are so valuable.
In addition to letters, Texans can send supplies and artwork by going to adoptanursinghome.com. I'm Sasha Cordner in Houston.
The Dallas Museum of Art is working to make exhibitions available online while closed due to COVID-19. This week, the DMA launched a virtual tour for Flores Mexicanas, Women in Modern Mexican Art. It allows people to simulate what it's like to walk the halls of the gallery, gazing at paintings by artists such as Frida Kahlo. Casey Hurst is the museum's director of marketing and communications. She explains they've been working for a while on how to create virtual tours.
So part of that, from a technical standpoint, is like having a certain type of filming done to be able to capture the space in a 3D capacity, and then taking that and making an experience online by finding a way to host that and including lots of different information about the experience that you're looking at.
Hurst adds the DMA plans to launch more virtual tours to reach people at home. And the National Park Service announced today Big Bend National Park will be closed until further notice. The closure is in response to concerns raised by local and state health officials. I'm Joseph Leahy for the Texas Standard.
It's the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. You've heard the stories of many parents adjusting to their new roles as rookie IT experts, setting up teleconferences and file transfers for their school-age kids. But there's another hat which some are wearing in this new normal, that of math teacher. Oh, sure, you may remember how to carry the ones and stuff, but your kids may tell you that's not how they're learning math anymore. Voices rise, pencils get broken. Sound familiar? Carrie Cutler gets it. She is the mother of eight, but she is also a former grade school teacher who now teaches mathematics education at the University of Houston, and she is the author of the new book, Math Positive Mindsets, Growing a Child's Mind Without Losing Yours. Carrie, great title. Welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thanks so much, David.
Eight kids? For real? Are they all at home with you? How's that going?
We only have six at home now, but they're all boys. We have seven boys and one girl.
And the oldest two are at college. Sounds like you've done something right there. You got some in college. Let's talk about teaching your kids math. A lot of people going into this just thinking, look, I'm not a math person. The kids are going to have to wing it, or we're going to have to wing it together. What's your message to parents who are trying to help their kids with math at home?
I think those are really common kind of feelings that parents have. And I would just encourage parents to be patient with yourself. You know, we are teaching math differently than we learned it when you and I were in elementary school. And it's okay to learn alongside your child the new kinds of approaches that are more conceptual or have a different type of vocabulary. And I'd also encourage parents not to give kids permission to dislike math by saying things like, I was never good at math, or, you know, I'm really more of a language arts person. That doesn't really help. Instead, your kids will appreciate math a lot better if they hear you say how useful math is in your day.
Wow, so I'm already doing it wrong. All right, well let's back up for just a minute then. There are sort of a couple of levels here, because if you're dealing with, say, a kid who's in grade school or middle school, quite often it's the basics that you think you know. You know, you can do multiplication, division, that sort of thing, but your child is learning it a different way in school. How do you go about trying to help them in that situation?
What I like to do is say to my kids, can you show me how you learned it at school, and have them teach me? And that's really empowering for them. And plus, it gives me a little chance to kind of get familiar with the model before I have to help reinforce it.
Then you've got the other level, right? You've got a teenager who may be stressing to learn trigonometry or calculus or something high level that you felt intimidated by back when you were going through it.
Sure. And that's a really common feeling, too. And I want to assure people that it's okay to get help with mathematics. I have a doctorate in mathematics education, and I've had a tutor since seventh grade, always in my math classes. Math doesn't have to come easily to be a worthwhile pursuit. It's okay to struggle with things. It's okay to work hard. And it's okay to try hard to understand things. So just because you have to call in backup for your high school student in math, that doesn't mean you're a bad parent or that you're bad at math. It just means that you know how to get support for your kids.
So what you're doing is you're basically reaching out to an expert, maybe a tutor, maybe someone who could use the this opportunity, especially in times like these, but they can perhaps join by teleconference or something like that and help your own child through homework assignments, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Something else that I've found with, you know, varying results, and I'm interested in how you see this. Sometimes I'll go online to YouTube and I'll look up something. Khan Academy has been a decent resource on occasion. There are some other resources out there. What do you think of that approach where you're sort of searching for answers on YouTube in a sense?
Yeah, I think there are lots and lots of resources out there, especially now. It's like the floodgates have opened. All the publishers and all of the professional organizations have so many resources available. And even at the University of Houston, we have a YouTube channel called UHouston Math, where we explain those math models that can be tricky for adults to understand and our kids are using in their classes. So take advantage of those resources. A lot of them explain it in plain language. It makes sense. They do multiple examples, and then you can try to apply those on your own.
Let me ask you sort of a pedagogical question. A lot of parents right now are embracing this idea of cutting themselves a little bit of a break, you know, on the learning side of things. What do you think of that approach? I mean, we see our kids kind of stressing out, and it's like, no, just relax. Go get a juice box. We'll hit it later. How do you feel about that?
I feel like that's important. You know, we can overstress ourselves. We can overschedule ourselves during the day with all of this learning at home. And sometimes we just need to read the cues that our kids are sending us. If they seem like they're not able to engage right now, then it's okay to go outside. And I tell my kids, run outside and run around the house four times, you know, and then come back in and we'll have a snack and we'll go at it again.
There are resources out there. Don't give up. Carrie Cutler is the author of the new book, Math Positive Mindsets, Growing a Child's Mind Without Losing Yours. And she's a clinical assistant professor at the University of Houston. Dr. Cutler, thanks again, and good luck with your own homeschooling.
Thanks so much, David. Have a great day.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Rand Group, partnering with SAP to help mid-sized companies streamline operations such as CRM, finance, and procurement. More at randgroup.com. Software delivered as promised. No surprises.
This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. At least three employees at Immigration and Customs Enforcement detention centers in the Houston area, ICE detention centers, have now tested positive for the coronavirus. This as some doctors, advocates, and lawmakers call for the release of detainees ahead of a full-fledged outbreak. Houston Public Media's Elizabeth Trovall has more on how immigrant detention centers are trying to handle the pandemic threat.
Maria Vasquez is worried. Her father, Roman Vasquez, is a detainee at an ICE facility in Conroe.
And I think when they noticed that he was actually sick, when we pointed all that attention towards him, they realized he was really sick and they isolated him from everyone else in the medical unit and general population.
While in detention, her father was taken to the hospital for pneumonia. She says her family spent hours trying to get a hold of someone at the immigrant detention center to understand what happened.
My dad's never had a problem where he just couldn't catch his breath.
Here's Vasquez on the phone with an administrator after several calls to the facility and showing up in person.
He was taken to the processing center. He had his breathing machine with him.
Vasquez is concerned her elderly father's underlying health issues make him especially vulnerable to COVID-19 and other diseases. He's been detained for just over a month. In that time, one security officer at the Conroe facility has tested positive for COVID-19, according to Geo Group, which operates the detention center. Other sources have told us that two guards have tested positive. And Vasquez fears her dad might have it too.
I think he's had it and he's probably still dealing with it. When my sister went to go visit him, he was very, very sick. He said it was hard to breathe. They had to have him on an oxygen tank. He had pneumonia.
She says her father was placed in isolation in the medical ward, but doesn't think he was tested for COVID-19. Though ICE hasn't confirmed any detainees in Texas have COVID-19, six detained immigrants in other states have tested positive. Epidemiologist and federally contracted whistleblower Jody Rich says where there's one positive case, there are likely others. That's because social distancing is impossible in these facilities. So the disease spreads like wildfire.
You know, there's going to be waves of infection through these facilities that, you know, most people, 80% are going to be fine and 20% are going to be quite ill. I mean, the people I'm seeing in the hospital, they're going to die if they don't get medical care.
Rich says a sudden onset of patients from an outbreak in detention could strain local hospitals, and detainees might not get the medical attention they need to stay alive.
The healthcare system is great at dealing with a slow dribble of sick patients. And we saw that in Italy. You saw that, you know, there's large numbers of infections and there's large people in the hospital, mortality rate staying low. And then it just turned, and then the mortality rate shot up when they reached capacity.
That's why more than 3,000 doctors nationwide signed a petition urging for the release of detained immigrants, most of whom aren't facing any serious criminal charges. ICE currently holds some 38,000 people in immigrant detention nationwide. Around 40% of those are being held in Texas. Dr. Rich says the irony is while it's complicated to release inmates from our jails, another at-risk population, the mechanism for releasing immigrants is simpler.
With the 38,000 people in immigration detention, there is one central authority that could release any or all of them.
But there's no evidence the federal government will be releasing anyone from these detention centers. Meanwhile, families hope their loved ones on the inside will stay healthy. I'm Elizabeth Trovall in Houston.
Like so many other places, animal shelters across Texas have had to close their doors. And what's happening with the critters inside? Well, as KERA's Hadi Mawagdi reports, shelters are coming up with clever ways to care for animals during the pandemic.
Long hours at a Dallas-based software company had kept Kelly Hamilton from adopting a pet. So when she found out her bosses wanted people to start working from home, she decided to foster a dog. Now, she's sharing her apartment with a black-mouth cur named Amaris from Dallas Animal Services.
And it's just nice to have, like, another responsibility added on, and just kind of, like, having her to play with and walk definitely has helped the stress.
It's also been a big help to the shelter. Dallas Animal Services has the third largest intake numbers in the country. They take in more than 40,000 pets each year. Leah Bacco, the shelter's public information coordinator, says they started preparing for the eventual shelter-at-home orders weeks ago.
And at that time, we were actually a little bit concerned because we were getting very close to capacity, which is kind of when we start really pushing adoptions and fosters and, you know, we're running out of space at that point.
After that first push, DAS adopted out or found foster homes for more than 160 dogs. But during that same period, Bacco says they took in more than 200 new dogs. That's why, pandemic or not, DAS cannot afford to pause adoptions and fostering. To keep up while practicing social distancing, Dallas Animal Services launched drive-through adoptions.
We will have you pull up to our, you know, front door, and we will load the dog up in your car and send you on your way. Exactly.
Other shelters have taken this approach too, including the San Antonio Humane Society, Austin Pets Alive, and the Fort Worth Animal Care and Control Shelter. Those places are still housing dozens of dogs and are looking to place pets with other people who suddenly find themselves stuck at home.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. We want to reassure you that Houston SPCA is still here and we're still operating.
That's Joe Sullivan, Vice President of Development at Houston SPCA. She started popping up on the shelter's regular Facebook Lives to let followers know the organization is still up and running for the greater Houston community.
Our ambulance in Harris County will continue to run. Our cruelty investigators will be out on the streets taking calls and investigating felony level animal cruelty. And lastly, our Wildlife Center of Texas is still taking in animals. We may have to stay.
Julie Kenstel handles communications for Houston SPCA and says coronavirus is just another obstacle the shelter will have to overcome.
We've been here for almost 100 years. We're well-versed in responding, especially to hurricanes, but we've had some unprecedented emergencies in just the past couple years.
Because of those past experiences, Kenstel says, like Dallas Animal Services, Houston SPCA came up with a plan before COVID-19 started shutting down Texas. Texas cities.
We had a mega adoption event. We had 176 adoptions. It was a curbside adoption based on the CDC's safety guidelines. We had it outdoors, but it was a good event.
Since then, they've placed all of their adoptable pets in forever homes or foster homes.
How you doing, Phil? Hey, Phil. Hey, buddy. Hey.
Darlene Azinski of Dallas says she started fostering pets nearly 2 years ago and loves it. The retired product marketing engineer took in a one-year-old pup named Apache just before Dallas County's shelter-in-place order went into effect. And she doesn't mind at all that she'll probably have to hold on to Apache a lot longer than she expected.
It gives you something to look forward to in the morning. And, you know, the thing about a dog is, I mean, they're going to love you probably more than you love yourself.
Azinski says some folks may be scared about fostering or adopting animals right now, given all the uncertainty. But she says, we're going to make it out of this, and pets are going to help us. So why not help them? I'm Hadi Mawagdi in Dallas.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas College Savings Plan, administered by the state of Texas. Families can save for tuition, room and board, books, and other qualified education expenses at eligible schools nationwide. Learn more at texascollegesavings.com.
I am Jody Edgerton, and I'm with the Typewriter Rodeo. And we are a group that crafts custom poems on vintage typewriters. You give us a word, an idea, a phrase, something you'd like a poem about, and we will write you a poem on the spot. This poem is a listener request for Lisa Stuardi. Poem in my pocket. I keep it always with me, tucked away, out of sight. A poem designed to remind me that the path I'm on is right. The paper has been curled with wear, the edges soft and torn. The letters fade, but I can read it late night or early morn. I know it's there just when I need some wisdom or advice to rein me in or ground me if I'm skating on thin ice. Thank you to the poet who crafted me these lines. Tucked into my pocket, in my heart, this poem shines. I'm Jody Edgerton, and you're on Texas Standard Time.
Support for Typewriter Radio comes from Texas Children's Hospital, here to help Texas families navigate this crisis with regular updates, resources, and advice. More at texaschildrenscoronavirus.org.
You can catch the Typewriter Rodeo each Friday right here on The Standard, anytime on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And hey, don't forget to send us your Typewriter Rodeo requests on social media or just shoot us an email, texasstandard@kut.org. We'll get it over to the folks in the rodeo. Wrapping up the week wouldn't be complete without checking in with Alex Samuels. She's political reporter for the Texas Tribune. Alex, good to speak with you again.
Yeah, of course. Happy to be back.
This week, Governor Greg Abbott expanded his executive order for Texans. Stay at home till when, and what about schools?
Yes. So now Texans are told to stay home until the end of April unless they're taking part in, quote, an essential service or businesses. And on the school front, schools are now closed through May 4th.
Guess there was a little bit of a flap over what's essential when it comes to faith-based gatherings.
Right. So in Abbott's new order, he essentially encouraged churches to do services remotely if they could, but said if they couldn't and they wanted to meet in person, that was fine as long as they followed CDC guidelines. That includes, you know, staying 6 feet apart and, you know, not shaking hands and all that other type of thing.
Yeah, I guess this was sort of a little bit of his way of pushing back against the fact that some religious leaders had faced some challenges from local law enforcement over holding services, that kind of thing. He's saying that you can have services in Texas, but you still have to maintain social distancing. Now, some are trying to legally challenge portions of Governor Abbott's order as it relates to jail releases. What's that all about?
Yeah, so on Sunday, Abbott had issued another executive order which suspended a lot of the state's bail laws and banned the release of people in jail accused or previously convicted of violent crimes without paying cash bail. So civil rights attorneys then filed a motion on Wednesday arguing that the order unconstitutionally discriminates against poor defendants and takes away judges' power to make individual release decisions.
Is this because what? Because there had been some people pushing for the release of folks who are currently incarcerated due to the spread of coronavirus?
Yeah, that's correct. Some larger counties were looking at, shrinking their jail populations during the pandemic. I think Harris County was considering a large scale release of some of its nearly, 8,000 jail inmates last week.
I guess another story that went viral, I suppose you could say, this week, we learned of a group of University of Texas students who went to Mexico for spring break, despite warnings from everyone virtually about travel. Now it seems they've come back, many of them testing positive. What's the latest there?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, 2 weeks ago, at the height of the pandemic, I believe it was about 70 UT Austin students went to Cabo for a spring break, and now we found out that 44 of them have tested positive for the virus and are self-isolating, and more are being monitored and tested.
Seems like Speaker of the House Bonin had some harsh words too.
Yeah, his words were "quit being an ass," and that was his message.
Oh boy. It's not necessarily bringing out the most judicious language from everyone, but obviously right. This was one of these high profile stories. Alex Samuels is political reporter for the Texas Tribune, and you can read more about any of these issues and a whole lot more over at texastribune.org. Alex, have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Wells Dunbar is back with us one more time for this work week. He's our social media editor. Wells, what's the talk of Texas on this Friday?
Hey, David. Well, it is Friday, so we're trying to find some good news out there heading into the weekend. I have to say, we heard earlier about the boom in animal shelter adoptions brought on by folks staying at home. And on our Facebook page, we have some lovely doggos and their owners sharing pictures and stories. For the most part, these were animals that were part of the family before the coronavirus outbreak, but it's still nice to see the love and companionship they bring to folks. Debbie Prather shares a photo of her social distancing support dog, Junebug, who rescued her back in 2013. And Robin Richter, she shares a pic of her two pups that she says are keeping her engaged and entertained while they're hunkered down. So yeah, lots of focus. You know, we are in this sort of like nesting period. I saw someone on Twitter use the term burritoing, which is basically to wrap yourselves in several blankets and not leave the house.
Yeah, absolutely. Kitty, get away from that microphone. Get away, kitty cat. Come on.
No.
Yeah, this is one of those. It just happens, right? They crawl up on the desk and what can you do? You know, they're
They are distraction machines, those cats. But at least they're silent compared to the dog. So if you hear any barks in the background over here, you'll know what's going on. You know, also earlier in the week, we brought folks a story about how many Texas companies were retooling operations to aid in the fight against COVID-19, things like distilleries, making hand sanitizer. Really heartened by some comments we received from some listeners there. John of Blackley says, "Well done to everyone turning in to help. I have great faith that the problems with supplies and equipment will be solved despite some politicians' involvement. Go Texas. Don't wait for approval or permission. If you see something that needs to be done, do it with the energy and passion that Texans bring." And also Janice Hitchcock, a regular listener and commenter, she says, "I, for one, will be remembering the companies who stepped up to help their neighbors and the companies that didn't." So definitely an opportunity for lots of people to pitch in and help. I've seen many cities.
Absolutely. There are loads of opportunities out there for people who want to step it up and help out. I've seen some really interesting, creative ways where people have retooled their retooled their candy factories and all kinds of things, just to find new ways that they can help provide needed material or perhaps cheer people up too. Get stuff out to people who might not be able to get out right about now.
Yeah, even financial support. I see cities like Austin, they're doing citywide fundraising resources. Mm-hmm. So lots of ways to help out if you are able to.
Just look for them. In fact, you can find out a lot of resources over at texasstandard.org and keep up with the news all weekend long right there. We're out of time for the big broadcast, but we'll be back on Monday. Till then, have a safe and healthy weekend.
Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare, the Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Woldridge, Adrian Killam, and the George Huntington family. Would your company or organization like to be a sponsor as well? Contact your local station for opportunities within your community. For statewide sponsorships, visit TexasPublicMediaNetwork.com.